Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Donut Dynasty. Nah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty.
Diagnostic, popped it, now your team is the topic. Eitan and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. All bold, but no bold, it is roll in a roll that I'm told. Come a bowl to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks, yeah. I ain't changed my oil in weeks, yeah. How'd I get a lot of these stains on my seats, yeah. Only mechanics that I trust cause it's free, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. It's my dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this, is it that, is it picks, is it bad? Do I even have a chance, do I got it in the bag? Let me know.
Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty. Nah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty.
Diagnostic, gnostic, gnostic.
Thanks for listening to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast. Tune in every week for a thorough inspection of the Dynasty landscape to learn how recent news affects your roster and to gather strategic tips and tricks to give your squad that turbocharged boost it needs. Please welcome your head technicians, Eitan Mosia and Sam Lane.
What's going on, guys? Welcome to the shop. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast, a part of the Dynasty Trade Calculator family of podcasts and brought to you by BestFantasyFootballLeague.com and Fantasy Data. My name is Eitan Mosia. I am joined, as always, by Sam Estompy Lane. You can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at ETAN Mosia. Follow Sam at FF Stompy. And our guest today is a former NFL Network anchor. He's hosted Clippers pre- and post-game radio shows. He's written for The Athletic. He's run multiple Emmy Awards. He's hosts DirecTV's Fantasy Zone and now has rejoined his old friend and former co-host on NFL Fantasy Live, Matt Harmon at Yahoo Sports. The talent on this man is absolutely unparalleled. He's done it all. He's done absolutely everything that you can in this industry, and I feel like I can go on and on with these accolades, but I'm getting too excited myself. I just have to introduce the man. What's going on, James Coe?
What an introduction, man. I'm hyped to be on the show, you know? This is, wow, what an intro. I appreciate that. Thank you.
We like to, and I'm going to use this word again, we like to fillet our guests, James, so.
It's a hell of an introduction, and I'm more than happy to be here.
Man, again, thank you. Thank you so much. Guys, if you don't already follow James, then you just don't fantasy football or fantasy anything or sports anything, because he kind of does everything under the sun. It's not just football with him, but you can follow him on Twitter at James D. Coe. So please make sure to do that. And I got to start by asking this question, and this kind of goes into what I was saying before, man. You've done everything. You were a reporter, photographer. You hosted and anchored all kinds of different programs. You have a role at EA currently. You have a role at Yahoo. You just mentioned another one that you're working on right now. You've done NFL.com. I mean, what about this entire winding path of things that you've done to kind of get where you are do you think mattered most in you becoming the success that you are today?
Man, you did your homework. Holy hell.
Yeah, that weird guy that's looking at you, that's stalking you on LinkedIn, that's me.
That is fantastic. Yeah, no, look, I've done a lot of stuff, you know. I was a country music DJ to start my broadcast career. I've called high school basketball games, high school football games. And you mentioned it, you know, there was a time, my first start in the television business was being a part-time high school football game photographer. I was getting paid $10 an hour. And it was part-time work. I think I was working like 30 hours a week or something. And it was just, I was shooting high school football games and it wasn't on air at all. There was zero on air portion of that. I was just doing it just to kind of, get a little bit of money as I continue to look for work. And just one thing led to another. And yeah, I just kept moving up. And then I found myself in great situations, partnering with great people and just finding people who believed in me, you know? And I think that was the biggest part for me, was just, you know, I don't need 10 people to like me. I just need one guy to like me. And I have gotten really fortunate in my career, to find that one particular person. I mean, let's be honest here, man. If you have followed my work on television, I'm not your cookie cutter dude. You know what I'm saying? So I needed people to kind of buy into the brand of broadcaster that I was, which again is not, what you normally see, I think, on TV. So I have gotten really, really lucky in terms of finding the right people to kind of believe my work. So there you go.
Wait, so you're saying that me putting out a video in a singlet is the off type of off-brand things that I need to do to get on live television?
I would not go that far, my damn friend. It. But yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, people ask me like, you know, well, first of all, it's weird, you know, because I think I've taken a pretty quick route to where I've gotten to. And then you look around the industry and there are other people. As you mentioned, Matt Harmon's a guy. I mean, the guy's, he's not even 30 yet. It's just insane how, you know, I think he turned 26 or he's 28 maybe now. But the guy's just a rising supernova in this industry. And yet people, you know, I think I look at my career overall and I say, man, I got to where I got to pretty quickly. But I think a lot of that just had to do with just kind of sticking to it and working really hard. And if I do have one skill that I'll pat myself on the back over, it's just being able to find work. And I spend a good amount of my week actually, you know, reaching out to people and kind of networking and, massaging those contacts. So I don't know, man, like I said, I think I do a pretty good job of that. And I think I do a better job of that than most people would think.
Hey man, that is a great talent all itself. Because this industry isn't necessarily one thing where, you know, you walk in, you get a college degree and you kind of get placed into what your career path is. It's one of those things that you really kind of have to make your own job in a lot of ways and find different ways to put things together to kind of get what you want out of it. But you seem to have perfected that and I admire the hell out of that.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, no, it's been a fun ride. And honestly, I just can't believe the journey, honestly, but it's been a lot of fun and it's been really gratifying.
All right. So next question, we are not going to end the similarities that we actually have there. I went to school for political science. The plan was to go directly into law school after that. I did not pass go. I did not collect 200. I decided that law school at $100,000 to $120,000, $150,000 wasn't necessarily going to be for me, just because, you know, my intention with it was always going to be to work in sports anyway. I wanted to do it simply to be an agent of sorts. So I decided that, you know, if this was a career path that really only kind of gave me one way that I wanted to take it, I don't necessarily know if I wanted to pay that extra money. So I decided to go against it. And it looked like you did too. So you started with the law study, and then you eventually went into journalism at USC. So what was the spark point or the spark plug that kind of changed around how you decided what you wanted to do with the rest of your career?
James, the call is coming from inside the house.
Listen to me. We've traced the call. It's coming from inside the house. Our squad car's going over there right now. Just get out of that house.
I am...
Blink twice if you're okay.
Holy hell. I am so impressed by the level of research. Oh my goodness. No one has brought up my undergraduate degree in 10 years, man.
Hey,
that's impressive.
That's why you're on the show.
I like it. No, as you mentioned, you're right. I got an undergraduate degree in legal studies from Cal, and I had no intention of going to law school whatsoever. I just wanted to work and make money and do those things. And I actually held, I sold insurance for a little bit. I worked in Yeah, I lived and worked in San Francisco, and you know, I did high tech sales for a bit
in there too.
Yeah, so it's, you know, I actually got a pretty late start in my career, honestly. You know, I didn't get my first TV job, I don't think, until I was, I'd have to go back and think about it, but I think I was like 26 or something when I got my first TV, actually my first on-air gig. I was probably like 27 or 28. So yeah, man, look, I had a regular 9-to-5 job. I didn't like it. And I've always gravitated towards sports broadcasters. And it's really interesting. I love sport. I love sports. Love it. But I've always gravitated more towards the broadcasters than I did towards the athletes, if that makes any sense whatsoever. I loved Chris Berman growing up, you know, like I had the pleasure of in the LA area of listening to Vin Scully, Chick Hearn, guys who are just absolute monsters in this business. So, yeah, I've always gravitated to those voices, and I just wanted to give that a try. I did a little bit of that in college. I did a little bit of play-by-play. I did a little bit of hosting of a sports talk radio show at Cal, but certainly nothing serious at all. I didn't know what the hell to do. I got like did a little moonlighting over at a sports talk radio station in San Francisco. So I was working my day job and then go there at night and kind of do those things, and got my tape together, sent it out, got a radio gig in Montana. And then I did radio for 2 years, and then I went to graduate school at USC and then got my master's in journalism. And then my TV career kind of, I don't want to say it took off, but certainly I got my opportunity in TV and I made the most of it.
Hey man, that is an awesome journey. And, that is something that, you know, personally for me is very, very inspiring. Cause like you were saying before, yeah, I actually did a lot of the same things. Did tech sales, kind of went the sales path out of school, decided that it wasn't necessarily for me, and decided to go in a different direction. But yeah, it's nice to know that you're not alone in this world. Finally, before we get to the real meat and potatoes of the show, yes, I'm going to use that cliche, so if you still want to make a cliche alert, Snoppy, you can. What are your interests? Tell me something you don't know. What are your interests outside of, obviously, I mean, country music, DJing, so I just assume that, you know, country music is where it's at, and sports. So if you have to take those two things out of it, what are you going to spend, like, say, a weekend day doing, assuming that you have these things called weekend days?
Yeah, well, first of all, let me clarify something. I did country music DJing for 2 years. I am not a country music fan. And I know that sounds super weird. I have listened to country music, and I have certainly my 2 years in that space, appreciate, good country music, you know, but you know, what's funny, man, I'm actually a hip hop fan. So I'm big into hip hop. You know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, I can tell you the B side of the last Logic, you know, album or something, but like, you know, or the Logic mixtape, but like, you know, I'm a fan, you know, and I consider myself to be much more of a hip hop fan, than anything else. I just want to clarify that, because I don't want people out there thinking like, oh yeah, this dude listens to Travis Tritt all day. It's like, nah, not really, bro.
But you do listen to Old Town Road is what you're saying.
Hell yeah, listen to Old Town Road. There we go. I'll listen to every remix of that, man. Like, it's all good. Well, he's up to like 17 remixes. I got them all, man. I'm down.
Oh, man, I love it. I absolutely love it.
But, I mean, you were talking about, you know, just free time and stuff. You know, I'm big into combat sports, too. I picked up boxing, and I've been boxing for about a year and a half now, and you know, it's funny, man. I just turned 39 years old, and I don't know, man. When I was like 35, basically my body atrophied and was like, nah, dude, you can't play hoops anymore. And I used to be a big like hoops dude. I used to love to hoop, but man, like I couldn't move anymore. I couldn't move laterally. My back was giving out. My legs were kind of sort of giving out, and it was just wasn't fun anymore because, man, I just could not move laterally. And that was always a problem. So, and then plus two, it's like I would play for like 30 minutes and my back would be like, nah, you're done. I'm like, okay, this is not that fun. So I had to give that up.
Sam, didn't you used to ball too?
I mean, a little bit in high school, but my ankles are terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm right there with you. I played not basketball because, I mean, it's just not my sport. But I played soccer and I played football way back when and destroyed my ankles as well. So right there with you with that. But now we're going to get into our Dynasty Diagnostic for the day. But before we get into our Dynasty Diagnostic, let's go ahead and take a minute to talk about one of our brand new sponsors over here at Dynasty Diagnostic, over here at the DTC Network. We are proud to let you know that we are sponsored by one of the industry's leading NFL and fantasy research sites in fantasy data. Whether you want to hear consistently from some of the community's most trusted voices to check out their advanced efficiency and player performance metrics, or to populate your own personal projection models, they have got something for you. All you need to do is to use our exclusive code, Dynasty20. Again, that's Dynasty20. Go to the site, and that'll save you 20% off of all of their subscription services. Again, one more time, that's Dynasty20. I will see you at Fantasy Data this year. Now let's get into not our Dynasty Diagnostic. Wow, that was a rare misspeak for me. Let's get into our five-point inspection. All right, so Amari Cooper, he is suffering from plantar fascia. I think that's how you say it. I'm not sure. But it's a 1 to 4 week injury that could linger into and throughout the season. Foot injuries for wide receivers, to me, no bueno. Very, very bad. If this is a worst-case scenario for Amari, could we see Dak and the Cowboys struggle missing both Amari Cooper and potentially Ezekiel Elliott if his holdout extends into the season?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very concerned. I would definitely move him down, you know, my draft board quite a bit. I think you're right. Foot injuries tend to linger, especially plantar fascia injuries. Most recently, we saw it with somebody like A.J. Green, who tried to manage it, but I just – you know, and it all depends on how severe the injury is. Obviously, it's better that it's happening now versus later. You know, I don't imagine we'll see him in the preseason. I'd be very surprised if we do it. As a matter of fact, I hope we don't. He needs to heal. This is one of those injuries that just requires time. But a plantar fascia injury, you're right, can pop up and flare up at any time. And it's going to be something that I think he will have to deal with throughout the entire season. So it's a scary injury for me. And you're right. With Dak talking about, you know, his new contract and Ezekiel Elliott talking about wanting to hold out. And I'd be surprised if he doesn't hold out. I think he will. I think he will miss games. How many? I don't think he'll miss that many. I don't think we're going to see a Lev Bell situation simply because it just can't happen that way. He needs to play to accrue that time and get a year closer to free agency, which is when he would make his big buck. So I don't know. It's certainly a concerning development, I think, for Amari Cooper to have a plantar fascia problem. And you're right. I do believe it's an injury that will stay with him for a good chunk of the season.
I mean, speaking as a guy who suffers from or has suffered from plantar fasciitis, and, you know, I am one of those high octane athletes like Amari Cooper. You've seen me.
I should also tell people what you do. You're also a biologist, a scientist, right?
I am a biochemical engineer / scientist. So I'm super active and on my feet, and I run on. I don't. Yeah. It's fine. But I've had my foot issues before. And it's painful as me. Now imagine that as a superstar athlete who is expected to run and cut constantly for 60 minutes every week, not to mention practices and such. So yeah, this is definitely an issue going forward. I felt Amari Cooper was poised for a top 10, possibly top 5 season, and I just don't know what to make of this injury. I think he can play through it, but I don't know how that will affect him this season. And I think that concern extends to Dak. I thought Dak could have put up a top 5 season this season as well, but now he's without he's at least for the near term without Zeke, he will have a hobbled Amari Cooper. That lowers my expectations for Dak this season as well. So I'm moving him down a little bit in terms of my draft boards.
Yeah, well, you know what? I don't necessarily know if I'm going to be messing with Dak all that much. Now, this does scare me. As we all just stated, this is definitely something that can linger throughout the season. This is something for me, I think the more scary portion is that it can result in re-injury, as you were saying, James, with the same sort of thing that AJ Green has been dealing with, although I think his was a toe. This is one of those situations where it can get worse before it gets better. And if that's the case, then I don't necessarily know how to price Amari Cooper this season. Now, in a dynasty league, obviously, you're playing for the long haul. Amari Cooper is still relatively young. After this season, it actually might be in Dallas's best interest now, if he's injured, to wait until after the season to sign him. That way you get him on a better deal, on a better contract than you would otherwise. But for me, I feel like even with, let's say, an Amari Cooper at, 75-80% effectiveness, you still have Michael Gallup, who's going to at least ideally improve on that team. You have Tony Pollard to at least take the passing game work from Ezekiel Elliott, if Ezekiel Elliott holds out. And then you also have Jason Witten, as well as Randall Cobb, that they added to that passing game. So I still see the weapons in Dallas to at least propel Zach to that finish, kind of regardless of what happens, because I anticipate him getting even more work on the ground in the event that a guy like Ezekiel Elliott is out. But it is definitely concerning. It's something to keep an eye on, and I think everybody should definitely be paying a lot of attention to what happens with this Dallas team moving forward. There's a lot of moving pieces that are going on right now that could affect long into your dynasty drafts, especially over these next 3 weeks or so, which is kind of the crux, the big point in the dynasty drafting season, or in any type of fantasy drafting season for what it's worth. So definitely keep an eye on that. I would move Amari Cooper down. I don't necessarily agree with moving Dak as well. Now, let me ask you this. I already mentioned Michael Gallup. I already mentioned Tony Pollard. Let's talk a little bit more about Pollard and Weber specifically. If Ezekiel Elliott does hold out, Dallas has one of the easiest schedules for the first three games of the season. They could potentially let him miss a few games. He will then see that they're winning after those few games, and then he'll have a decision to make about whether or not he wants to come back at a price that's reasonable with the Cowboys. So my question is this. Do we think that if they have to, can Dallas get through it all with Tony Pollard and Mike Weber?
Yeah. I mean, look, I love Ezekiel Elliott. I think he's a fantastic player. He's a phenomenal player. Certainly, people for whatever reason want to dump on running backs, and I understand that they are a very replaceable commodity. But Zeke is a special player, right? So he does a little bit of everything. He's great in the pass game. He's great as a pass blocker. Obviously, we know what he can do inside and what he can do outside. He's just a complete football player, man, and I love Zeke. That being said, it's like a lot of the reasoning behind running backs not having as much value is because you're able to piece together a little bit of their value, or a good chunk of their value. You'll be able to get 80% of what Zeke gives you by throwing out, guys like Tony Pollard, right? So will he be James Conner? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, it's possible, I guess. I think you can get by with Tony Pollard, and I think we will see his ADP rise significantly in the coming weeks, as it becomes more apparent, I believe anyways, that Zeke will miss games. I mean, again, unless they work out some kind of deal, which seems unlikely given his contract status and what they want to get done with Dak too. So it just seems awfully, awfully hard. So, you're asking about Tony Pollard for sure. Yeah, I'd buy in. And again, if Zeke is going to miss games, you'd be smart, I think, to pick up Tony Pollard in round 10 or 11.
I'm actually on the Mike Weber train. Mike Weber's had two 1,000 plus yards from scrimmage seasons in college, including a 1,000-yard rushing season. And those two seasons, he also had 23 and 21 catches or receptions. So, I mean, he's proven himself, I think, relatively well at Ohio State. And not to say that Pollard hasn't. I mean, Pollard has a 29 reception, 36 reception, 39 reception seasons. He was never used much as a runner at Memphis, but I mean, that'll probably happen when you have Darrell Henderson in front of you. So I think it's probably, I don't know if it will be one guy takes the majority of the snaps. I think it's probably going to be a mix of Tony Pollard and Mike Weber. But I don't know how much, like, that offensive line is one of the best in the league. And I just don't know how much, I think I can agree with James here that you could probably get 75 to 80% of Zeke's production out of those two or even three if Darius Jackson's involved as well and Alfred Morris. So I think the big one that's going to hurt is Amari, and if Amari's hurt. But, I mean, with Gallup, I mean, if Amari's hurt, Gallup's going to get volume, and we all know volume is king in fantasy football. If Amari's in there, he's going to get his targets. So I just don't know how much that affects Gallup. I think Gallup can still be a wide receiver three if everything goes his way. But yeah, unless Amari like actually tears a ligament or actually has something more serious than people think, I don't think this affects Gallup all that much.
Is Gallup even, I guess in redraft formats, is Gallup even a draftable asset? I don't think I've seen him go in too many drafts. And the reason I say that is because I find it interesting that you guys are so high on Dak Prescott. And I guess I would like to know why, mostly because this is a low volume passing attack. And I know Dak is able to rush the ball a little bit, and he'll be adding value there. But quarterback is such a deep position, especially in 2019. I agree that he should be a drafted asset. There's no question about it. But to me, he's just a streamable guy. And he's somebody that I would love to take late in draft. We're talking after round 12. And just kind of mix and match his matchups with other quarterbacks. I don't see him as an every week starter. I think he's somebody that's going to be floating around the top 12, but other than that, I definitely don't see him as a locked and loaded top 10 asset. And maybe he's somebody that I think might be somewhere in the top 12, but maybe. And again, it's mostly because Dallas, to me, is just a low volume passing attack, and they really try to grind the clock out, to be honest with you. And why wouldn't they? You know, because they've got one of the best rushing attacks in the game. So I just don't think the total number of possessions and the total number of pass attempts will be there overall for the Dallas offense.
I can definitely understand that, but I feel like we saw a change just in philosophy from the Dallas Cowboys last year when they traded for Amari Cooper. Before that, Dak's attempts, looks like he threw 35 passes just once. After that trade, he threw 36, 32, 31, 24, 54, 39, 25, and 44. If you look at the last, 10 games or last 8 games of last season, kind of from week 10 on, Dak Prescott basically kind of alternated between absolutely weak winning and not startable. But, you know, he did it to the point that it makes me kind of feel like this coaching staff is at least going to attempt to make Dak more of a passer. And then you have to also kind of factor in the offensive coordinator change. Dallas had one of the least creative offenses last year. And we have Kellen Moore now to come in, who was a QB himself. So we at least hope that maybe he's going to put more onus on the shoulders of Dak Prescott. And Dak Prescott really wants to go out and make $40 million. He's going to have to be a higher volume passer than he's been in the past. And I think Dallas knows that as well. I think Dallas kind of has a real decision to make here. It's pay Dak Prescott or pay Ezekiel Elliott. I don't necessarily think you need to pay them both, but that's kind of how I'd be approaching this. I think Amari Cooper is somebody that you have to keep regardless. But if you're going to pay Dak Prescott, then I think you have to put more on the shoulders of Dak Prescott, that offensive line, and kind of just mix and match at RB.
Well, so I wrote an article for FF Statistics highlighting most of my arguments for why I think Dak could be a top five QB. And Eitan mentioned most of it. But, I mean, he... And really, even outside of Amari Cooper, he was the QB7 last year in those seven games without Amari Cooper. But, yeah, his PPR points went up by 3 points per game. Completions went up by seven. Passing attempts went up by six. Passing yards went up by over 70. Touchdowns went up by almost half a touchdown per game. So he was the QB2 from when he had Amari Cooper on. So that was my argument there as well. But with Zeke gone, again, don't know how that's going to affect, and I would have to look more into it, what Dak does without Zeke. And then if this injury to Amari Cooper affects the way he can, like, cut and run and the like, then I definitely don't know if I like him moving forward. Here's the splits for Dak with and without Zeke. With Zeke, he is the QB2. Without, he is the QB13. So that's a valid concern as well.
However, a lot of what you're looking at there was also in 2017 when they also didn't have their left tackle. So keep that in mind as well. I think if the offensive line is intact, then I don't necessarily know if that's Dak without Zeke as much as it is Dak without this all-star offensive line that the Cowboys have built for him.
That's a good point. Travis Frederick comes back as well. Comes back from that rare disease he had. I don't even remember what it was called, but it knocked him out of the entirety of 2018.
Something so bar. I can't remember what it's called. Something bar.
I can't remember what it's called either. But it knocked him out of the entirety of 2018. So I'm hoping he comes back and is, you know, an effective player, because he truly is one of the best offensive linemen in the game when he's right.
Yeah, they just invested so much draft capital in that line that it almost needs to be all-star for them to get any value out of the picks that they actually spent on the majority of that line. But let's move on from Dallas. Let's move on from those Cowboys. I just don't want to talk about them anymore. They're not America's team. They're not my team. Bronco fan here. Let's move on to another NFC team. Let's move on to the Chicago Bears. Last season, they had an offensive DVOA of just -3.4%, 20th in the entire NFL. They won with incredible defensive play, as they actually ranked second against the rush and first against the pass by DVOA, with a total combined DVOA of -26%, first in the NFL by nearly 12 percentage points. Vic Fangio has left. He is now the Broncos head coach. I'm very grateful for it, although I have real concerns about our quarterback situation, but that's neither here nor there. Do we think that the Chicago Bears can repeat without Vic Fangio? And do we think that with some reports coming out of Chicago that Mitchell Trubisky is a little bit behind his development, that Matt Nagy scaling back that offense is really going to heavily impact guys like Robinson, guys like Cohen, even David Montgomery, Anthony Miller, and the rest of the guys in that offense?
Yeah, I mean, I would think so. There's no question. Vic Fangio has proven to be one of the best defensive coordinators in the NFL, and we're talking about for like the last decade, right? So he has a proven track record going back to San Francisco, working with Jim Harbaugh, and creating just powerhouse defenses everywhere he's gone. So now that he's left, and look, they've got a capable replacement, but it's not Vic Fangio, you know what I mean? So I think we'll see a little bit of a step back. They lost Adrian Amos in free agency as well. It's still going to be a terrific defense. But will it be this one that's just a straight game changer week in and week out, where they're scoring, you know, touchdowns in bunches, grabbing interceptions in bunches? I don't know. You know, I think what we've seen, I mean, look at Jacksonville last year. Mm-hmm. Jacksonville took a huge step back defensively, and they went from the AFC Championship game to not even in the playoffs. So, yeah, it can happen, and it can happen that quickly. The defense didn't lose that many key contributors last year in Jacksonville, and yet we saw a huge drop off. And a lot of that has to do with, again, just the handshake between the defense and the offense. So, you know, you mentioned those DVOA numbers. I mean, that's about right. I think the offense was a little bit below average. They've got a great, you know, young back in David Montgomery. Hopefully he'll be able to kind of add a little juice to that running game. Jordan Howard, who I think is a good player, just didn't fit that system. They're saying, hey, we're going to do RPOs, so we're going to run you up the middle every single time. Now go create yards. That's not his game. You know, his game is, I hate John Fox, and I think he's one of the worst coaches in NFL history, but he had a power run scheme. And it was very clear, you're going to hit the A gap. You're going to hit the B gap. You're going to go outside, right? Like, and we're just going to pound it. And we're going to send fullbacks. We're going to send two tight ends. Whatever it's going to take, we're going to pull guards. We're going to pull tackles. And that's the kind of system, first of all, that Jordan Howard was accustomed to in college. And it worked out very well for him under John Fox. He's not an RPO guy, man. But David Montgomery, I think, from what we've seen in college – and what we've seen in that one preseason game, he is a guy that's got good lateral movement. Does he have long speed? No. But he's got great lateral movement. He almost has basketball moves out there. You know, great head and shoulder fakes, good side to side. And I think he will be able to create yards, especially in that RPO scheme that does ask running backs to create yards on their own, running them up the middle.
Yeah, I mean that way you brought up my point that I was going to make there with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I mean, Eitan, we saw it with the Broncos. It's just hard to maintain that level of competition and that level of dominance. And now you lose the mind behind that defense, or not only do you lose the mind behind that defense in Vic Fangio, but you lose Ed Donatell. So, and he's the guy that, I mean, he was the secondary coach for that dominant Bears defense as well. So that's just one of those things. You lost two fantastic coaches. You lost, like you said, Adrian Amos. You lost Bryce Callahan, who was probably he was the slot corner for the Bears to the Broncos, actually. So, I mean, it's just going to be tough for them to maintain that. In terms of that offense, I mean, you brought up David Montgomery, James. I'm not so high on David Montgomery, but I think the combination of Montgomery, Tariq Cohen, and Mike Davis, who I think is going extremely underrated at this point or should not be forgotten about, is can get the job done. I don't hate Mitchell Trubisky as much as my friend Eitan over here hates Mitchell
Trubisky.
I'm
sorry, call him by his proper name.
I'm not calling him that.
Mitch Trubortles.
Okay, fine. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough for them to repeat in the NFC North this year. I mean, that division is stacked sans the Lions. Right. But yeah, I mean, if you get Aaron Rodgers coming back and seeing positive regression in his touchdown percentage, we'll see what the Vikings can do with a more run heavy offense, but that defense has been good in the past and could be here this year too. So it's going to be difficult for them to repeat in the NFC North.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about the Chicago Bears before. Everyone that listens to this podcast knows that Stompy and I both have reservations about David Montgomery. But yeah, it's just going to be a tough division. I feel like the Green Bay Packers were a little bit down last season because Aaron Rodgers was hurt, which has kind of become a common theme that people aren't talking about that I think somebody should. Maybe we will next time. But yeah, it's just going to be tough going for the Chicago Bears. I'm not saying all is lost. I just don't necessarily know who you want to invest in an offense. If I had a gun to my head and I had to choose, it would be Allen Robinson, just because I think Allen Robinson is going to be in line for just lots and lots of targets. But outside of that, I just don't know who you're going to be comfortable rolling out week to week. And that includes Mitch Trubisky. So I really don't know how we're supposed to feel this comfortable with the Chicago Bears offense this season. I think we saw a little bit of a lucky streak last year. But let's move on. Let's move on to guys that we know are going to be good, that we know are going to be absolute studs this year. How studly is the only question, and that's why I'm asking it. Odell Beckham Jr. and Juju Smith-Schuster are two players within a shout of the wide receiver one. Not a wide receiver one, the wide receiver one finish this year. Is one more likely than the other? And I'm going to actually say my take first. And I wish I had a take here because it's splitting hairs between the two of them. But I think it's going to be Odell Beckham Jr. I'm not necessarily worried about the target squeeze out in Cleveland because I don't necessarily think that that's going to affect somebody of the talent level of Odell Beckham Jr. Especially with Duke Johnson leaving, I'm not necessarily sure if Dontrell Hilliard is the same thing as Duke Johnson. I don't think he's as good. I don't know how much Duke Johnson's going to be utilized in that offense anyway. We still have to talk about David Njoku. We still have to talk about Jarvis Landry. But this is why I like Odell Beckham Jr. this year, assuming he can stay healthy, which I think is the only issue. Odell Beckham Jr. last season with Eli the GOAT Manning had a target quality rating of 7.9. That was 47th in the league. He was terrible. He was trying to go out there and essentially having to do it all by himself, and he still put up good numbers. He still put up 2.55 yards per pass route, which was 14th in the NFL, and this was without any help from anyone else on that offense, essentially, other than Saquon Barkley. So I think if you're pairing that type of guy with a quarterback that's as aggressive as Baker in a system that we expect to be a really high-powered system that values the long game and values those long targets with Todd Monken coming in, I think Odell Beckham Jr. can be the wide receiver one. Before I hand this over to you, I will also say I also believe that Juju Smith-Schuster will see the most targets in the NFL this season.
Wow. That's interesting. Well, first of all, let me reiterate what you just talked about with OBJ. I don't necessarily agree with the Juju thought process there, but I'll just get this out of the way. I don't agree with that, mostly because he's going to play primarily in the slot. And slot running your offense through a slot receiver is really, really difficult. And slot receivers in general have a cap in terms of the number of looks that they're going to get, mostly because they're running into the teeth of the defense. And it makes those reads really, really difficult. That being said, it's an offense that threw for 5,000 plus yards last year, and obviously Antonio Brown and takes with him, 170 or whatever it was, targets and all those yards and touchdowns. But so he will see an uptick, but I think they'll find two or three other guys to kind of lessen that load. But going back to Odell, I agree. I mean, 1,000%. And as a matter of fact, if I have Nuke as my wide receiver one, and I've got Odell as my wide receiver two. And I think that's a lot higher than a lot of folks have him right now, maybe except for you guys, because you guys sound just as ecstatic about his prospects as I am. But you mentioned Todd Monken, man. This is a guy that last year, first of all, the Tampa Bay Bucks, I'd have to double check this, but they led the league in air yards. They air it out. And we're talking about a team with Ryan Fitzpatrick and Jameis Winston. It's a team that threw for 5,000 yards. That is just insanity to me. Now we're talking about, somebody with Freddie Kitchens as the head coach, Todd Monken as the OC. You've got Baker Mayfield, who last year showed a proclivity to air it out. I'm not worried about – I don't understand why people get so worried when there are multiple good weapons in the passing game. How is that a problem? I guess, I hear this all the time. Too many mouths to feed. No, there's no such thing. I mean, it just to me, I don't understand that. There is no such thing. First of all, touchdown upside goes way up. Passing yardage goes way up. And just overall, you just want this to be one of the healthier. This is one of the healthier offenses in the NFL. And no matter what, the floor is raised, the ceiling is raised, all of it is raised. I just don't understand. I don't understand that logic, and I don't buy it, and I'm vehemently against it. So having guys like Jarvis Landry, having guys like David Njoku, even Antonio Callaway, to be somebody who can alleviate some pressure over the top, I think Odell Beckham Jr. is in a prime spot to be a top five wide receiver, locked and loaded. And you're right. I think he will challenge to be the number one wide receiver overall. If there is one concern I have for Odell, it's his health. That's it. But other than that, from a production and talent and volume standpoint, give me OBJ all day long.
So don't include me with your fantastical ideas about OBJ. Either of you. Get out of here. Yeah. Mine's more about I won't say disbelief in Baker, but my suspension of belief in Baker. Yes, he had a great season last season, but can he elevate this year? That's the question for me. Whereas, like, I know what Ben has done. I know what Juju has done the last two seasons. Now we, like you mentioned, there's 167 targets gone with AB. I don't think they're going to throw as much as they did last year, but even seeing a, let's just say, a 20 to 30 target bump, you're talking almost 200 targets. Now, the big question for Juju is, will they keep him in that flanker type receiver role? And if they don't, that is a gigantic mistake by that Pittsburgh Steelers offense. If they keep him in that role, though, like, I honestly, I think Devontae Adams probably leads the league in targets, but Juju's up there for me. And as I said earlier, volume is king, and Juju has done a ton with that volume. And now they're missing double-digit touchdowns. They're missing 1,400 yards. Juju has a path right now to be the wide receiver one in my head, whereas I have questions about Baker. And it's not to say I don't think Baker's good. It's just that can Baker rise to that level where he's throwing for 4,000 to 4,500 yards, 30 plus touchdowns? We will see.
Stop it. Just stop it. I don't know what you're talking about with Baker Mayfield. We don't need to have this conversation.
We can absolutely have this conversation all the time.
Because you brought it up. So Baker Mayfield was above average at all target depths last season. 15 yards down the field, he was 85 quarterback rating. Middle field, it was 144 quarterback rating. Right side of beyond 15 yards, 90. Everything close, right-hand side, 100. Left-hand side, 93. Middle, lower than 15 yards, was the only one where he was slightly under his average at 79 overall. That's just his QBR. If I actually go into the metrics looking at how he was able to produce these numbers, his deep ball attempts last season, even not playing a full season, was 75, 5.4 per game. This was without Todd Monken, but this was just with Freddie Kitchens. And he threw the 17th most attempts in the entire NFL. I mean, this is a team that just lost a big piece from their offensive line that a lot of people seem to kind of be disregarding and kind of shoving that into the past because they have a lot of shiny toys. But they lost Kevin Zeitler. I just don't know how effective that running game is going to be.
Oh, get until out of here. You're going to make me lose my goddamn mind.
Until they actually get in the red zone. I think this is going to be a Baker Mayfield-focused offense. Ugh. And I think that is a perfect mesh with Odell Beckham Jr. However, you are not the only person that I have problems with here. James, last season, Keenan Allen played 45.8% of his total playing time, his total snaps in the slot. And he was the 11th most targeted receiver at 137 targets, 9.1 per game. Even if Juju is playing mostly in the slot, I definitely believe that they can do that. And I don't expect Juju to be entirely in the slot. I think he did that when he had the luxury of having AB there with him. But now with no AB, I think he's going to be moving back and forth, like guys like Keenan Allen and Michael Thomas do frequently. And I think for that reason, we're still going to see a very, very heavily targeted receiver. Last season, Devontae Adams was Devontae Adams because it was Devontae Adams and nobody else. And that's kind of what I'm looking at when I see Juju happening in Pittsburgh. But still, I think, I mean, if we're just looking for pure upside here, then yeah, you've got to go Odell Beckham Jr. for me.
Disagree.
I think just to clarify, I agree with what you're saying. You know, Keenan Allen is clearly the number one target hog in for the Chargers. I was about to say San Diego for the Chargers. But as you mentioned, though, it's hard to run your entire offense through a slot flanker wide receiver. I mean, even Keenan Allen, as much of a target hog as he was, he saw 136 targets. Juju Smith-Schuster saw 166. You know, Stompy, you mentioned, you know, him pushing maybe 200. I don't see that as a possibility. I don't think we've ever seen a slot flanker get 200 targets. I mean, don't quote me on it, but I don't recall ever seeing a position of that nature, seeing that level of target share. And that's the only thing I'm talking about. And with that too, again, Juju Smith-Schuster had 7 touchdowns. Keenan Allen had 6 touchdowns. It just becomes so much more difficult, unless you're Tom Brady, to find guys in the slot flanker and get them touchdowns. It just becomes more difficult to do that because they run shorter routes, and it's harder to throw passing touchdowns once you get to within, you know, goal to go situation. So I just have some hesitations there. I love Juju, and I absolutely think he is, you know, worth a top 12 selection. I don't think that he's going to be a guy that ends up challenging to be the wide receiver one. That's all. I love him as a player. He is absolutely a top 10 wide receiver. He's absolutely going to challenge for a top 5 spot. One overall? Okay, now that's where I'm like, okay, maybe not.
I can see that. I can see where you're coming from. Any last points here, Sam, before I move on?
Okay, I didn't say Baker was bad, by the way. I have never said Baker is bad. I said prove it.
Lamar Jackson over Baker Mayfield, right?
I did. I said that.
All right.
But Lamar Jackson's GOAT.
Wow. Loyal listeners of the show, you already know where this was going to go with that. So, yes, this was just me attempting to piss off Sam. Mission accomplished. Let's now move on. Who of the lesser known targets in the New England passing game is the guy that we should be paying attention to this offseason? Obviously, they have Jacoby Myers, who was the guy whose name I could not come up with last time that we recorded this show. They have Maurice Harris, who is a guy that I do know because he was on the Washington Redskins last year. He played a few games in the slot and he was killing it for them.
He's from Cal.
There we go. He's from Cal, so James knows all about him. Is there another guy maybe in this kind of cluster that they have going on in New England that is going to be the guy to emerge to be that solid secondary target in New England? Or is that secondary target's name James White?
I don't buy any, you know, receiving options at all in New England. Maybe Julian Edelman, but even then you're having to draft Julian Edelman with no upside with the pick. I mean, and it might be fine. Where's he going right now? Like, you know, 5th round or whatever it is. Actually, I'll look that up. But no, he's going in the early part of the 4th round. So I just don't see any upside there. You're drafting him like he's going to absolutely play 16 games and absolutely give you everything that he gave you last year, which I don't see that happening. I understand why there's a thought. And this all goes back to me, exactly what I said about Juju Smith-Schuster. It's so difficult to run your offense through a slot receiver. They're going to need to find outside guys. There's not a single outside player that they have that I would trust. N'Keal Harry is certainly somebody that is, from a physicality standpoint, intriguing. Production standpoint, Arizona State, he was a baller. He's an absolute physical wide receiver, somebody that could fight to get open. That being said, he's not one of those natural, you know, wide receiver go up and get it types. The guy needs to fight to get what he earns. And I really like him as a player. But will that work with Tom Brady, who is somebody who's going to make a read? And if you're not immediately wide open in 0.2 seconds, he's not throwing you that ball, right? So N'Keal being that guy that needs to fight off a DB, I don't necessarily know if his skill set meshes well with what Tom Brady wants to do. Now, that being said, he's going to be somebody that does the outside targets. And Tom Brady certainly will throw him some rocks. But there's from a week in and week out fantasy perspective standpoint, there's not anybody I trust. And again, Edelman's probably the one guy that people are going to trust, but you're drafting him at the absolute max peak of what his value is. He's not going to outperform his ADP. He's not going to outperform a second rounder. This is not going to happen. So I don't really like taking players like that. And I'll let somebody else take Julian Edelman at his advanced age in his position, you know, playing in a really good offense. And I know he's the number one wide receiver. I'm not going to draft him at that price.
Fire Julian Edelman takes. I love it. Didn't see this coming.
So,
I mean, I like Edelman as a real life football player. I just, from a fantasy standpoint, I don't understand the price given his long statistical history and also given his long injury history as well. I just, drafting him at the top of the fourth round to me is like, okay, great. Like, that's fine if he absolutely plays 16 games, but I don't see him giving that to you.
I completely agree, by the way.
I don't like N'Keal Harry this year, specifically because the Patriots just haven't done well with rookie wide receivers, but Tom Brady seems like a guy, and I think this has just been proven in the past, that has to trust his receivers, and a rookie wide receiver obviously isn't going to gain the trust, plus he's had his drops in training camp. So I think there is some stuff that N'Keal Harry needs to work out with his route running, with his chemistry with Tom Brady, etc. Do you, James, do you not buy the hype with Jacoby Myers this year? I mean, or this in training camp? Because, I mean, he did catch two touchdowns in that first preseason game, and I know I am one to rail against making conclusions based off of one preseason game, but everything that we've been hearing coming out of camp is Jacoby Myers is excelling. And, I mean, it might be because Julian Edelman is not out there, but he needs to throw the ball to somebody. And, I mean, Jacoby Myers is kind of a, I don't know if free square is the right word, but basically you can low risk, high reward, I suppose, at the back end of drafts.
Yeah, look, as an absolute flyer, I think both N'Keal Harry, if his price comes down, and Jacoby Myers, I think, are absolutely worth flyer picks. I mean, look, this is a good offense. It's a really good offense. And so long as Tom Brady and Bill Belichick are there, they're going to score points. They're going to move the ball. This is not an offense that's going to struggle, right? So, yeah, you want pieces of that pie. I just, you know, again, it just depends on what the cost is. I really wish Edelman was more of a seventh round pick, then I'd be saying, yeah, sure, absolutely, he's a guy that I absolutely would target. But he's just not that guy. There's too many. Look, there's no Rob Gronkowski. We've seen this offense at times try to find themselves when Rob is not there. So with no Gronk, you know, I'm sure they will have a plan this offseason with no Gronk. And it's the best coach in the NFL. It's the best coach in NFL history, to be honest with you. You know, dealing with this. So, yeah, I think he'll figure out a way. I'm not worried about it. That being said, all these guys are just flyers to me. They're all lotto tickets. Jacoby Myers, N'Keal Harry, whoever else it might be. I just feel like the reports we're hearing about Jacoby Myers and just watching him play too, I'm like, this guy is Chris Hogan to me. I don't want to buy into that hype again. You know, we bought that hype last year, and everyone who drafted Chris Hogan got absolutely burned by it. I don't want to buy into it this year, and if somebody wants to overpay for Jacoby Myers, go for it, but it won't be me.
But is it the 2017 Chris Hogan or 2018 Chris Hogan?
That's a good point.
That's the question.
That's a great point. Yeah, that's a great point.
So essentially what you're saying is I, in the Scott Fishbowl, am going to be starting five wide receivers a week just because I start wide receivers. I don't tend to draft that many running backs. I have N'Keal Harry as my starting wide receiver five. Are you saying it's not going to happen for me this year?
I like him, you know, and I know that he has not had glowing training camp reports, but to be honest with you, I actually like what I saw in the preseason, and he just kind of looked like the ASU receiver that I've come to expect. You know, somebody, again, that's big body, physical, going to fight off a DB. If you're a corner playing against N'Keal Harry, you know, bring a lunch pail because you're going to go to work. This guy's going to work you. And I know Bill Belichick will find ways to get him the ball. So will it be a consistent amount of volume? Probably not. That's probably where I worry, you know. There's you know what? I would be 0% surprised if there's going to be a game early where Nikhil goes for like two touchdowns and everyone's scrambling to go get him on the waiver wire, and then he'll fall asleep for the next, you know, 3 weeks and do nothing. He'll get dropped and then pop up again with another touchdown. So it's just that's the kind of production I'm expecting from their various wide receivers. Nikhil to me is an excellent best ball candidate. I would love him in best ball. Redraft, just especially in PPR where I don't think he's going to give you a safe floor at all, I probably would pass. But, and again, it's nothing against Nikhil. I really, really, really like him as a prospect. And I think it's a great fit for what they want to do in New England because they need somebody to go over the top and threaten vertically. And he's a good player to do that. It's just from a fantasy perspective, I'm probably out.
I can see that. I can see that. I actually share a lot of your concerns. Things dried up a little bit earlier than I hoped they would. So that's how that happened. But let's now move in to our final point of the 5 point. What is the craziest thing you see happening this season? Bold prediction. Craziest non-consensus take that you have, James, that you think is going to totally just change everyone's minds on the subject.
I've got two. And people are going to absolutely blast me for it, but at the very top of your draft, and I just wrote an article about this, at the very top of your draft, I'm saying, forget about Saquon, forget about CMC. I've got Alvin Kamara as my 1.1.
Yes.
And then I'm saying go wide receivers at 2, 3, 4. I don't have a problem with that. And look, I think my colleague Matt Harmon wrote a great piece back in 2016 about Todd Gurley, how he wasn't worth a top five pick. Everyone was taking him top, you know, 1, 2, right? And Harmon was saying, no, I wouldn't even draft him 5. And a lot of that had to do with the offense is so bad. Running backs, regardless of talent, don't do well in those kind of offenses. I look at Saquon Barkley. I get that they've improved their offensive line. As a matter of fact, I like their offensive line. You know, getting Kevin Zeitler to add to Nate Solder and Will Hernandez, I think that's good. It's going to be, at the very worst, it's going to be an average offensive line. So last year they were one of the, you know, 5 worst offensive lines in the NFL.
Worst.
Okay, well, I don't know. Is that true? Because Miami had a really bad one. Arizona might have had.
Let me get the numbers here, but continue.
but regardless, certainly they were, you know, bottom 5, right? Now I think they'll have somewhere around league average. And everyone's saying, well, they've improved their O-line, so Saquon's obviously going to have just as good of a season. Just doesn't work that way. You know what I mean? Todd Gurley had a fantastic season the year prior to 2016. Great season 2015. They had a horrible season in 2016. It's because team defenses, they catch up, man. You know, and that's just what's going to happen, especially with no OBJ in the fold. Guys are just going to stack the box every single time. And to me, that's a problem. I think Saquon's a great – I think he's a great player. I love him. I loved him at Penn State. I loved him coming out of college. I love him in the pros. I think he was worth a top 5 selection because he is a generational talent to me. That being said, from a fantasy perspective, he comes with a lot of downside risk. Now, if you take him 1.1 and he gives you RB10 production, are you going to be disappointed or are you going to be fine with that? If you're fine with that, then go ahead and take him 1.1. If you're not fine with that, then, and you want a different draft strategy, then that's why I'm saying I think zero RB in 2019 is the way to go. Saquon, to me, comes with a lot of downside risk. CMC, same exact thing. First of all, I think he had a phenomenal season last year, obviously. I will be the first person to say mea culpa on that because I thought North Turner was the worst hire you could have possibly made at OC, and I was dead wrong. Norv did a fantastic job last year, not only integrating CMC to his fullest potential, but also navigating around the Cam Newton shoulder injury. I know they didn't win that many games, but offensively, you know, I didn't think that they weren't horrific offensively, and they should have been with Cam playing with a busted throwing shoulder. So I thought Norv did a good job last year. It's just, to me, I worry about the shoulder. And again, I think that comes with a lot of inherent downside risk. And everyone keeps saying, oh, there's going to be more checkdowns. You just can't play football this way. You might be able to get away with it 8 games. Give me that over a 16-game schedule. It's not going to work. People are going to figure this out. I hate when people tell me, oh, but look at last year. It doesn't work that way. Teams figure this stuff out. Defenses adjust. They will figure out a way. First of all, nobody was expecting CMC to come out gangbusters like he did last year. It took the league a long time to get adjusted to what he was doing. And they will do that again this offseason. So they're going to have to figure out new creative ways to get him the ball. I'm sure that they will. But if Cam's shoulder flares up and they've got to throw Will Greer out there, no thank you. You know, to Taylor Heinicke, no thank you. I think they'll figure out – I think defenses will adjust, and I think CMC comes with some downside risk as well. Again, I'm not saying they're going to be busts. I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying is that they do come with more inherent risk than people are talking about right now, and that's why I'm saying give me Alvin Kamara 1.1 and give me those wide receivers, whether we're talking about Nuke, Odell, Devontae, Julio Jones. Give me those guys as my 1-5. So that's my hot take, and I know people are completely going to disagree, but I just find it shocking that people think that whatever especially in football, whatever happened last year is going to hold over into this year. That's just the stupidest way to analyze fantasy football to me.
I absolutely love it, James. I am all the way there with you. Kind of. But I will say that Co knows definitely when it comes to the offensive lines. The New York Giants had the fourth worst offensive line last year. It was actually the Jets with the worst. Tampa Bay Buccaneers after that. Buffalo after that. The Giants. And then those aforementioned Chicago Bears. I will say this in response to what you had to say about Saquon Barkley, and I don't necessarily know if I'm there with Alvin Kamara, so we'll talk on that. I think I'm where you are with CMC, but with Saquon Barkley, can't the argument be that Saquon Barkley was on a terrible team last season, except on a terrible team with the worst offensive line last season? Now it's essentially the same situation, just now he is kind of elevated in the amount of volume that he's going to get simply because there's going to be no Odell Beckham on the field. Does that change anything for you, or Odell, is that kind of something that you see differently?
So there's two things about when I say, you know, I'm not taking Saquon or CMC at their current price. Last year, you got CMC at a bargain, right? Like, the guy was a second-round draft pick. This year, you have to spend a top-two pick to go get him. Saquon, same thing. The guy was going to the back end of round one. If they fall there, yeah, of course, you're going to take him. It's fine. But they're not going to fall there. You have to take them 1.1 or 1.2. You have to. They're not going to fall. So price is a big part of it. Secondly, Odell, people discounting Odell is, to me, insane. There was a safety over the top of every single play because you have to. You cannot possibly play Odell without a safety over the top. It's just, it would be madness to do that. And to me, now with Sterling Shepard with a broken finger, who else is there? There's no one there that could take the top off of a defense. Why would you ever play a safety outside of the box against the Giants? Why would you ever do that? I don't think defenses are going to be that dumb. And I think they will go, you know, either single high safety over the top. Definitely not going. You're definitely not going to see cover two. Why would you ever play cover three against New York? It's not going to happen. It just means it's going to be more crowded. I don't care how many wide receivers you throw out there. You could throw out four wide receivers. They're not going to do that, but you could throw out four. I couldn't even name you four Giants wide receivers, to be honest with you. I really couldn't. I'm racking my brain. I can't think of four Giants wide receivers. That's how bad it is. I would just play press coverage and hope for the best. I don't think that they're and again, that's just me talking. I hope that defenses aren't – D coordinators aren't going to be so stupid to play off coverage or give space anywhere. There should be no space anywhere. Press the line, and see what the Giants do. If they beat you over the top, good on them. But there's just no one that scares me at all in that passing game. None whatsoever. I would be crowding that box, crowding that line every single time and seeing what happens.
I'm going to get this over to you, Stompy. Before I do, James, just one last point. Do you have any concerns, at least with Alvin Kamara, that we're just seeing the same situation that we kind of saw last year where, I mean, Mark Ingram essentially still exists except in a faster kind of sturdier body with Latavius Murray?
I can tell where Stompy's going with this, and I would tend to agree. Look, I like Latavius Murray. Obviously, he is a phenomenal athlete, big body, fast guy, great 40 time. You know, and he's a big boy, bigger than Mark Ingram. So I understand the athletic profile is certainly there. I thought last year he played admirably well behind, you know, a subpar offensive line there in Minnesota. So he played well. That being said, I think it is also fair to assume that Alvin Kamara will see an uptick. Does that mean there's no Latavius Murray? No, that's not what that means. It just means I think we'll see a little bit more volume with Alvin Kamara. This is a guy that saw, you know, what, eight, he's had 80-plus receptions in, you know, back-to-back years to start off his career. I don't see why that changes, right? So we're talking about a guy who gives you a very safe floor every single week. We're talking about somebody who's going to give you anywhere between 70 to 90 receptions, which I think is fantastic for the running back position. He's in a good offense. They're going to score points. They're going to get yards. He's one of the safer picks, in my opinion. He hasn't really had an injury history whatsoever. I know he had a knee issue back in college, but that was many years ago now. So I think he's one of the safer picks. Give me one of the best players from a talent standpoint playing on a good offense. I don't see how you go wrong with that pick at 1.1. That's just, and again, if we're talking about running back scarcity and you need a running back off the top, give me Alvin Kamara.
I hate you, Eitan.
I know.
But I mean, I do like this trend. A lot of people of late have started to put Kamara atop the running back rankings this year. And I mean, I love it because I love Kamara. He may not, we've seen his ceiling though. I mean, in through those first four games last year, he was the running back one over Todd Gurley. Like he was the running back one. And like James said, I think they're going to give Latavius Murray his touches. I don't know if they will match like 2017 Mark Ingram touches, but last year Mark Ingram touches, sure. But you just don't get consistency like he has shown the last 2 years, he and Todd Gurley. But I mean, if you look at the rest of those top, I guess, five running backs, there's question marks abound. I mean, I guess I don't really agree with the CMC one. But I think, I mean, Kamara finishing top five or top four each of the last two seasons, and it doesn't look like his role is going to diminish at all. And in fact, it might grow a little bit, and you're probably guaranteed for yet another top five season. And while maybe he's not getting the volume that CMC would get, Zeke would get if he was on the field, he's just efficient. And you can basically guarantee him for a top five season as long as he stays healthy. So it's one of those things where it's like, are you shooting for ceiling with that first pick, or are you shooting for, I'm going to get top five running back production from this guy, and I can basically guarantee it.
Right. That's exactly right. And just to piggyback on that, and I'm sorry, I do have to go, guys, but just to piggyback on that, it's, if you're picking 1.1, I think it's almost mandatory that you have some level of safety. If you whiff on that pick, you're done. I'm sorry, but you're done. You know, I mean, that means you absolutely have to hit home runs later in the draft. And there's been plenty of research done showing how difficult it is to go about doing that. And quite frankly, people who draft running back off the top are not motivated to swing for the fences in for running backs later in the draft. They're just not. They're looking for – they're trying to hit home runs with wide receivers. So I just – it's tough, man. I think that, again, if you are picking a top three pick, you do have to get somebody that will come in relatively well, that will show relatively well based on his ADP. That's all. And again – I just find it interesting, man. People keep talking to me about, you know, last year and CMC did this and Saquon. Look at the prices. The prices matter. You know, you took CMC in the mid to late part of the second round last year. Saquon was a late first round draft pick. That stuff matters. And is it wrong for me? I guess my point is I would, you know, price Saquon in the mid to late part of the first round, and I would put CMC there as well. That's all I'm saying is, and again, we're nitpicking here because I think they're fantastic players. You know, they could absolutely go bonkers again. They absolutely could. But you're fooling yourself if you don't at least recognize that they also come with that Todd Gurley-esque downside risk.
I can definitely see that. Just as a final point on this Saquon Barkley point, James, what you were saying about the stacked safety is 100% true. Last season, Saquon Barkley was 17th overall in the number of times that he actually saw a stacked front at 25.7%. He only averaged 3.9 yards per carry on those looks. So that's definitely something to keep in mind this season. But thank you so much, James, for coming on the show. Really, really appreciate all your insight. If you ever want to add a 17th job to all the things that you're doing right now, we have a host chair waiting for you anytime, man.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you guys having me on the show.
All right, so our Dynasty Diagnostic is presented by BestFantasyFootballLeague.com. So before we deep dive into that, let's pull into our BestFantasyFootballLeague.com pit stop. What's going on, guys? My name is Eitan Mosia. You know these sultry sounds from the Dynasty Diagnostic. What's happening, DTC family? I am here to tell you about BestFantasyFootballLeague.com. It's actually been around for 19 years, and what these guys do is they allow you to play in any league format that you can dream up. If you want to play in a one quarterback, three running back, four wide receiver league, these guys got you. For Dynasty Leagues, best ball leagues, redraft leagues, whatever your little heart can desire, BestFantasyFootballLeague.com has got you this season. And on top of that, money is even no object with these guys. If you want to be the type of dude that's putting in $20 into this league and wants to see if these players work out, you can do that. If you're the type of guy who's willing to take a stand on the hill of a guy like Damian Williams and tell everyone that he is a top five back and willing to put $2,999 behind that assertion, you can do that with BestFantasyFootballLeague.com. All you have to do is go ahead to the Dynasty Trade Calculator website. You can click the banner at the top. You can also click Join the League on the right-hand side. It'll take you straight to BestFantasyFootballLeague.com, and you can play against me, Stompy, John, JP, Izzy, all kinds of people from the DTC family on any of their leagues this upcoming season. Again, BestFantasyFootballLeague.com, guys. I expect to see you there. See you on the next one. All right, so let's plug in the analyzer and let's get to this week's Dynasty Diagnostic. Our episode 41 roster was submitted by Nathaniel Bruton. You can find him on Twitter at Nathaniel Bro. Please be sure to give him a follow. And if you want to be part of next week's show, all you have to do is follow the podcast, smash that subscribe button at the link in the description, leave us a review on iTunes and or Podbean. If you want to get to the front of the line, all you have to do is give our spawners, BestFantasyFootballLeague.com and Fantasy Data, a look. Not our spawners, our sponsors. There we go. All right, so now let's go into our Dynasty Diagnostic. It is a 12-team Superflex, 1 point per reception, tight end premium, start one QB, two running backs, three wide receivers, one tight end, one Superflex, and two additional flex spots. At quarterback, which is important today, Andrew Luck, Dak Prescott, Matthew Stafford, DeShone Kizer. We already talked about Dak Prescott today, so let's not do that again. But Andrew Luck is dealing with a lower extremity
injury. The Colts are slow playing this. They're playing this really close to the chest. We're not getting much information out on it. Just a few weeks ago, this was supposed to be something that was relatively minor that would be cleared up. Now we're hearing that it's been going on for about 5 months, and we don't know if Andrew Luck is going to be ready for week one. Are we doing this all over again with Andrew Luck? Do we think that there's a real chance that Andrew Luck sits out a good portion of the season all over again?
It just doesn't seem that serious. But then again, the Colts just have this reputation that they're going to hide whatever goddamn injury exists. But everything that I'm reading, it basically is just a rest thing, and that's what they're doing. And he won't be basically, I mean, I think he's throwing, but he's not going to be participating in preseason at all. So I'm okay with, I think I'm a little more optimistic than a lot of people that are panicking are. And I think the other thing is they have a good enough offensive line now that he doesn't necessarily need to be that mobile. So, and I'm just wondering if this affects his mobility more than anything. And, but him being a quarterback in the pocket, he will be fine.
All right. So with Andrew Luck and Dak Prescott, then I assume that we're pretty happy with this quarterback group, especially with Matthew Stafford backing him up.
Yeah. I mean, this is about as good of a quarterback room as you can ask for. Dak, regardless, he could be a top five QB this season if Zeke and Cooper were playing and healthy. So, but even then, we saw him be a top 12, a QB1 for each of the last three seasons. So I'm not overly worried about Dak this season. He may not reach the ceiling that I thought he could, but he's a great QB2 for you. And he could step into that QB1 role if Luck is hampered. Stafford obviously had a down year last season. He's going into an offense that's going to run the ball more, but I think he's due for a bounce back. If everything is true that came out during this offseason about his back and him playing with a couple fractured vertebrae or whatever. And he's healthy.
You know, just vertebrae.
Right. If he's healthy this season, he may not reach those QB1 heights. But, I mean, you're still talking probably top 15 QB with Stafford. So that's perfectly fine as a QB2 and especially as a fill-in, bye-week fill-in QB. And by the way, DeJean Kaiser is a Hall of Famer.
That's the name of the show. Just kind of put this into some context here. There was another quarterback that was dealing with a major back injury the last couple of seasons that a lot of people seem to have kind of completely lost some faith on, and that's Derek Carr. Derek Carr was dealing with fractured vertebra as well, and we saw that it had a major impact on his play. I mean, I don't know if that was the injury or if that was Derek Carr, but at least kind of keep that in mind as well. So if you're thinking that maybe this is something that you can put is in as an additional point in favor of maybe a Derek Carr reviving, reversal of fortune, so to speak, that could be something to kind of at least kind of tuck away back there. But yeah, I have Andrew Luck in a few different places. I know you have Andrew Luck in the Dynasty Diagnostic Champions League. You're still pretty confident with that pick?
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I mean, I'm going to try and pick up Jacoby Brissett probably sooner rather than later just for insurance purposes. But I honestly, this isn't the shoulder issue. And I just don't think that this ankle is going to stop him from playing this season.
Yeah, I think another good pick out there is Nick Mullins, guys. I really do think that Nick Mullins might have an opportunity this year. If you look at Jimmy G's contract, it's nuts. It's crazy. If you need kind of that, you know, third QB in a super flex that nobody's really targeting, I think it is Nick Mullins right now, on top of potentially Brissett as well, depending on what happens with Lux, whatever injury he has that they're not telling us. So let's move on to running backs. It's very, very rare when I come across a team where I feel there is a glaring need at running back. There is a glaring need
at running back here. It's a problem. It's a serious problem. You need two, at least, on this team. Melvin Ingram, James White, Duke Johnson, Jerick McKinnon, Nyheim Hines, Chris Thompson. Yeah, it doesn't get any prettier from there, and I think that says it all. Yeah, Mark Ingram, maybe I'm comfortable with as my RB2. I'd probably be most comfortable with as my RB3. He's your RB1 on this team. James White, I think we both agree, isn't a fluke, and we're not saying that he's a bad player, but I think you also have to put it in context that he was the only game in town for large portions of New England's season last year. He had a lot of scores on the ground. He had a lot more yards than he's ever seen in his career on the ground as well. I don't necessarily see that happening again this season with Sony Michel back in the fold. Obviously, Damian Harris is there. Rex Burkhead is now healthy as well. I just don't see how we get those same sort of heights from James White. Duke Johnson was just traded. A lot of people think that he's going to outright take that new Houston job. I'm not one of those people. I think he's going to serve as a complimentary back to Lamar Miller, and I think that both of those guys are going to cannibalize each other's value just a little bit, although neither of them had crazy amounts of value to begin with. I do still think that Lamar Miller is the starter there. If there's a guy that is going to finish in the top 24, I do still think it is Lamar Miller out in Houston. And that's kind of where it ends for me. Jerick McKinnon is injured. Nyheim Hines is going to be operating in the same spaces as Paris Campbell, as both of those tight ends out in Indianapolis, assuming that Andrew Luck isn't hurt. Chris Thompson is going to be on a terrible offense. We really, really need help here at running back. I'm going to let you talk about it because I tried to be nice. I have a feeling that you won't be.
I hate it. I mean, I'm higher on Ingram this year than I think a lot of people are. I do think he can be a back end RB1 if everything goes right, especially because he's teamed up with Lamar Jackson. And it's going to be a volume running offense. I mean, they're going to run the ball a ton. I would feel a lot more comfortable with him as my RB2, which means you need an RB1 and your depth is garbage. So you need another RB on top of that, because I would rather have James White as my RB4 than as my RB2 or even RB3. So, and here's the thing is, I just don't know where you're trading here. If you do get a true RB1 and another depth piece, I think you can trade those two 2021st you have for, when I hear 2021st, for some reason, Nick Chubb always comes to mind, but a Nick Chubb who I think could be an RB1 this year, a Joe Mixon, a Dalvin Cook. But those guys I would feel a lot more comfortable as my RB1 paired with Mark Ingram. Now, getting the depth is the issue here, because when we look at wide receiver and just looking ahead here, you have if on paper it looks like a fantastic wide receiver room, but you have Amari Cooper, who we talked about extensively on this podcast with the heel issue or the plantar fascia issue. AJ Green with the ankle surgeries and won't be back until at least week 4, probably. Cooper Kupp with the ACL. So then after that, we love Didi. I think he has the possibility of being a wide receiver 2 this season, but probably more likely a wide receiver 3. Cole Beasley's more likely a wide receiver 4 than anything. And then after that, it's not a lot. I mean, Jacoby Myers could be something, but we just have no idea. So I don't know who you're trading on this team outside of those picks. Luck's value is depressed right now, and you're not going to be able to trade Luck for, let's say, a Kirk Cousins plus, because his value is depressed right now. I'm sure Dak's value is depressed right now because of the injuries and the injury to Amari Cooper in the absence of Zeke. So you definitely need a better RB1 than Mark Ingram, and you need a better RB3 than James White. I'd be trading those 2021sts, but then I think that only is going to net you an RB1, and then I don't know where you go from there.
Yeah, I'm in full agreement with you. Just to go over the wide receiver room one more time. Julio Jones, Amari Cooper, AJG, Cooper Kupp, D.D. Westbrook, Cole Beasley, Rashad Higgins, Jacoby Myers, Seth Roberts, and Greg Dortch. Yeah, yeah, this is tough. Again, like you said, on paper, this looks great. Julio, Amari, AJG, Kupp, and D.D. after him. But all of these guys are kind of dealing with their own situations. Julio Jones just came back from his own injury. He's going to play every game regardless of how injured he is. So I'm not necessarily worried about that. But Amari Cooper could be, you know, instead of a top, you know, 10, top 8 receiver, he could be closer to a wide receiver 2 this year because he's going to be dealing with that injury for the majority of this year. AJG, I just don't think we know at all what AJ Green is right now. I think that's a real possibility. If anybody does it this year, that he goes from hero to zero that quickly. Not because he's not elite, not because he's not an incredible talent, not because he's probably not even a value right now in drafts, though I think he is. I just think that, you know, if he does come back, the chances for re-injury are high, and this is a guy that's been dealing with that many years throughout his career. Over the last 5 seasons, he's been injured for 3 of them. So I think that's something that is a real, real concern. Cooper Kupp, I personally think, is going to come back just fine just because we're hearing such glowing reports coming from him in training camp. It looks like the doctors are just on another level this offseason, getting him back to full speed, getting Emmanuel Sanders back to full speed. I'm not sure how much I believe that, but I mean, if sports science is at this level, then it's really only a matter of time before we're living on the moon. It's getting that good, it seems. But still, I think you have to worry about these injuries long term. And what you were saying about, you know, what you then do to kind of fix the problems that you have at running back, I'm not sure, because when we go into tight ends, Vance McDonald, David Njoku, Blake Jarwin, I think that's a fine tight end room. I don't think you can take anything away from that tight end room. I don't think that you're going to be able to trade Njoku for, you know, somebody plus that's going to net you something, unless it's one of those older guys or potentially you're taking a shot at Jordan Reed. And then what happens? I don't think you can trade Vance McDonald for that much. I think these guys are valuable in and of themselves. I don't think they hold much trade value. So, yeah, I'm super worried with this team. We'll get into what I think you should do when we get into the final diagnosis, but yeah, I'm not quite sure how to view this team as a whole, even though I like the tight end position group. Before we get into our total diagnosis here, Sam, how do you feel about these tight ends?
Oh, I'm perfectly fine with the tight ends. I mean, Vance McDonald, I think, steps into a big role this year. I don't think you're going to expect top 6 numbers. I mean, but top 8, top 10, sure. And I'm perfectly fine with that as your tight end 1. And then Njoku likely is going to have his weeks. I just don't know how he becomes a tight end or is a tight end 1 this season, but you can stream him when McDonald is on a bye or has a bad matchup. So, and then Jarwin's kind of a wild card, because we saw Jarwin produce some games at the end of the season last season, and he's behind an old, decrepit Jason Witten. So he could step into a role too. So yeah, I'm perfectly fine with these tight ends because you have a good starter and you have a good backup.
All right, let's now get into what our final diagnosis is. And I will start here. We're totaled. It's sad for me to say that, but we're totaled here. There is no way for me to compete this season with what you have on this team. I think you need to come to Jesus. You need to come to terms with where this team is. I would be selling Mark Ingram right now. I would be selling James White right now. I don't think you're going to make much value for those wide receivers. I think you kind of have to hold on to them right now because of the entirety of your team, so to speak. Julio Jones, you're not going to get value for him. His production outweighs what you would get for him in a trade at this point, at least for me. I think if you're going to trade him, you have to trade him in season. Amari Cooper with this injury, he's unmovable. AJG with this injury, he's unmovable. Cooper Kupp, I mean, you could move him, but then you wouldn't have Cooper Kupp. You wouldn't have one of the best players, I believe, on this roster. So for me, it's one of those situations where you need to look to the future and you need to not necessarily utilize those 2021 first, but at least get them closer
to when they're actually going to be used to trade them. So I would be looking to trade them either at the end of this coming season or on draft day, honestly, I think is when you're going to get the most return for your buck. I don't think you should spend them on anybody either because this team has some age to it. It's a little bit long in the tooth if you're looking at all the players on this team. If you're going to compete, you need to compete soon. So I really do think that this is a situation where you have to wait until next season, trade those 2021st for what you can get to plug in those two holes at RB. You're going to wonder what happens to this wide receiver room. Hopefully after the season, everything comes out fine. You're still okay there, but I just don't think this is a situation where you can trade both of those, get one piece back, and be competing. I think you'll get into the playoffs, but you'll sneak into the playoffs, and you won't necessarily get to where you want to get, and then you have no assets to go ahead and rebuild next season. So this, for me, is total. It's a cash for clunkers. That I guess, should be a segment now. You have to do something different. You have to be honest with yourself and with this team and do the things that you need to do to set you up for future success now that you cannot compete this season.
I am not going to – I won't fully agree here. I will say you do have to do just something drastic. Now, whether that is buy a brand new car, and that means totaling this entire car and or this team and selling off the pieces you can, selling off Julio, Ingram, I wouldn't be selling those 2021st, probably AJG for what you can get, James White for what you can get, or you could sell those 2021sts for who I think could be a running back one. And like I said, Mixon, Cook, Chubb, Connor area, and sell Julio for a combination of something like Tyler Boyd, Chris Carson, Tyler Boyd, Devonta Freeman, Tyler Boyd, Marlon Mack. And that would make me feel okay. Cause this is just how I build my teams, especially in startups, is I like to go RB heavy early. And then I feel like I can win with wide receiver two. So give me Boyd, Amari, AJG, Cup, and Didi. And then Beasley is kind of a wide receiver four there. And I feel like I'm okay at wide receiver. And then, like I said, you have, let's just say, Chubb, Ingram, Mack, Chubb, Ingram, Devonta Freeman, James White. I feel a lot better with that. So, and that team, I think you can compete with. So it's, you're going to either have to buy a lot of parts to rebuild this thing, and maybe not rebuild, but soup up this thing, or you're going to have to sell all of your parts to restart and buy a new car.
All right. So you've heard it from us both. Drastic changes are needed. Really quickly, before we go ahead and return the keys, I just kind of wanted to ask you, Sam, what do you think the biggest storyline to watch from here on out is? We're going to get into week three of the technically 5-week preseason. What do we think that we need to see from this point that's really going to move the needle? Obviously, we saw Jacoby Myers flash. We saw Preston Williams flash. I'm not sure if there's any other guys out there that are really kind of getting you to have a real eye on them, but do you think that there are a couple situations, couple teams, couple depth charts that are still kind of in flux that people should be paying attention to?
One interesting one right now is Houston. Because, I mean, you have Will Fuller coming off of a ACL injury, and he's already had small tissue injuries. You now have Kiki Kuti, who it's an ankle, I believe. But he's also had his soft tissue injuries. And then you have DeAndre Hopkins with his shoulder. I don't think DeAndre Hopkins is going to be all affected all that much. But who's the second pass catcher there if everybody else is injured? I mean, Jordan Thomas had moments last season. A lot of people are on Kahale Warren. Duke Johnson could end up stepping into a huge role if Kiki Kuti and Will Fuller are not 100% entering this season.
Yeah, yeah. I hope Fuller is. I've been hearing good things from Fuller, and I think if Kuti is injured, then it could definitely be Fuller, and we can see a low end, at least, wide receiver one performance from Fuller if he can actually stay healthy for a season. But that's a good point. I mean, both of those guys have dealt with all kinds of injuries. DeAndre Hopkins can't get targeted 300 times. No human being can. So they're going to have to find somebody else in that offense to go ahead and manage that target load. But that is going to be it for today. Please make sure to follow your head technicians, myself at ETANMosia on Twitter. You can find Sam at FFStompy. Go ahead and follow James Co. at JamesDCo. Also, make sure to tune into DirecTV's Fantasy Zone. You can find me at Fantrax and at NumberFire. Go ahead and figure out what Sam is working on at FF Statistics. And please go to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast feed on iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating and review. It really helps the podcast grow. It'll help us reach more listeners. It'll help us reach more of the technician family and pull them into the shop as well. It'll also help you get your roster on the show if that's something that you're interested in doing. And thank you so much for making it to the Dynasty Diagnostic Service Center today. Please be sure to keep up with your scheduled maintenance and catch us next time to ensure quality performance. See you on your next visit. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty now. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty. Diagnostic popped it, now your team is the topic. Aton and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. All bold, but no bold, they just roll in a roll that I'm told. Comp a bowl to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks, yeah. I ain't changed my oil in weeks, yeah. How'd I get a lot of these stains on my seats, yeah. Only mechanics that I trust cause it's free, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. It's my dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this, is it that, is it picks, is it bad? Do I even have a chance, do I got it in the bag? Let me know. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the dynasty now. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the dynasty. Diagnostic, gnostic, gnostic.